Hi, welcome to Module 3, Instance Architecture. We will break this module into two separate parts, and we will discuss all the things that the SQL Server and Oracle do in order to provide effective resource management on the instance level in those two parts. So the first part, we'll talk a little bit about configuring various configuration settings on the server level and how it is done in Oracle and in SQL Server. We will talk about the memory architecture and what are the functions of various memory areas and how SQL Server and Oracle manage their memory. And we will talk about the process and thread architecture, how the various threads and processes in Oracle are used to execute our queries and handle our client connections. So let's start with the configuration of the server. Many configuration parameters that you can set on the instance level have to do with allocating and managing resources and handling hardware resources in various ways. In Oracle, the configuration is done either through the initialization parameters in configuration files or by using alter system, alter database statements. In SQL Server, those configuration parameters are generally set using SQL Server Management Studio, so using the graphical user interface that is available in the Management Studio, or by setting them using spconfigure system store at proc. Some of the more advanced configuration parameters can also be set using command line switches in SQL Server Configuration Manager. So sometimes, for instance, advanced switches such as trace flags that change the behavior of SQL Server are being set by appending an appropriate configuration parameter in the management, in the SQL Server Configuration Manager. Generally, SQL Server exposes fewer configuration parameters than Oracle, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Many resource management options in SQL Server are self-tuning, and they work well for most of your workloads. It is very rare that you have to kind of step out of that default design and affect that that behavior using some of the more advanced options. So the list of configurable parameters that are known and documented for SQL Server is somewhat smaller than that for Oracle. Still, it provides for rather effective management of the database engine. Let me show you how to configure SQL Server using various methods. So I will take a look at how we could configure my SQL Server instance here using both GUI as well as the management, spconfigure store at proc. So first of all, let me start by opening the properties box, the properties dialog for my SQL Server instance. And one of the things that you can do from this dialog is setting various configuration parameters, such as limits for the minimum and maximum server memory, setting the processors that the server should use, and configuring various other configuration options. So many of those options are available through this dialog, and you can change them using the server properties dialog from Management Studio. Another option is to use spconfigure. And spconfigure is a store proc that allows us to list and change configuration options available on our instance of SQL Server. As you can see, after executing spconfigure, I only get 17 individual configuration options. All of them, by the way, are documented in the books online for SQL Server. These are the basic configuration options. There's also more configuration options, but they are not exposed by default. In order to see them, you have to execute spconfigure, setting the show advanced options configuration option to 1, and then reconfigure in order to make sure that this change takes effect. And then finally run spconfigure one more time, at which point I see a lot more configuration options. As you can see, I now have 69 configuration options available. So this is an example of setting a configuration option through the spconfigure start proc. In order to change any of those other options, you would do exactly the same. So you would choose the configuration option you're interested in, for instance, backup compression default, and then set that configuration option to the right value, and then reconfigure in order to put that change in effect. And as you can see, the backup compression default option has been changed to 1, so our backups would be compressed by default. As you can see, spconfigure lists the names for all the configuration options. It also lists the minimum and maximum values that are allowed for each configuration option. And then finally, it lists what is the currently configured value, as well as what is the currently the value currently in effect. So sometimes you might have a configuration option that was changed, but that change has not yet taken effect because, for instance, the reconfigure statement wasn't run, or your SQL Server instance hasn't been restarted yet. So in this demonstration, you've seen two various methods for setting your configuration parameters. Now, one of the most important resources for any database management system is memory. Memory is very important because databases are generally memory bound. We need a lot of memory in order to cache our data, and in order to cache various other information, such as, for instance, execution plans, and avoid performing the same operations over and over or performing additional I/O. So any database platform is always very memory hungry. Therefore, it is important to manage memory effectively for our databases and relational database management system instances. Memory allows your various user connections to share the data in memory. They also allow to share execution plans and many other cacheable information. So both Oracle and SQL Server use memory in order to avoid performing a lot of other operations and performing extensive I/O. You reduce the impact and the amount of I/O that you have to perform by sharing the information, caching and sharing the information in memory. Now, Oracle uses two main memory address spaces, the SGA and PGA, to store information for various caches. The system global area serves as the universal caching area for Oracle, and then specific processes within Oracle use the PGA to store information that is specific to those processes. SQL Server has a similar model when it comes to the shared area, but since SQL Server only uses shared servers and not dedicated servers, there is no PGA area in SQL Server. So let's take a look at the Oracle's system global area, versus SQL Server memory pool. As you can see, there are various types of cache that are stored in the SGA as well as in the SQL Server memory pool. The most important of those is buffer cache. The buffer cache stores the data that is read from your database. This is typically the biggest and also the most important area of your memory. That area allows you to avoid performing extensive I/O whenever you access your data. In addition to that, very important area of SQL Server memory is the procedure cache, which is essentially the execution plan cache, which allows us to avoid extensive compilations and operations in generating execution plans, because we can cache the same execution plan and reuse it multiple times when the query or stored proc is executed. So multiple connections can take advantage of the same execution plan that is placed in memory. That limits the amount of CPU that is needed for generating execution plan and limits the amount of work that your query optimizer has to perform. Similar like Oracle, SQL Server has great many types of cache. There's separate metadata cache, there's separate security cache, various types of caches depending on the functionality and the features that you use on a particular instance of SQL Server. A very important aspect of SQL Server architecture is a component known as SQL OS. SQL OS stands for SQL Operating System. It's a foundation layer within the SQL Server instance that provides operating system like functionality and capabilities to other components within SQL Server database engine. Essentially, SQL OS is a abstraction layer over the real Windows operating system that the SQL Server is running on. And the goal of the SQL OS, or the functionality it provides, is on one side to improve performance through effective memory management and having a unified memory management model across various components within the engine. And on the other hand, by performing effective process scheduling and making sure that we use the CPU resources in the best possible way. So let's take a look at some of that functionality. Non-preemptive scheduling, also known as user mode scheduler, is part of the SQL OS, and it provides us with the ability to not switch the threads and not switch the processes that are running our queries unnecessarily. It optimizes the way we use CPU resources. The non-preemptive scheduling, or so-called user mode scheduler, contains of schedulers, generally one scheduler per each logical CPU on the system, and the threads that are running various tasks. Those tasks are generally our queries and other various background processes. And the memory management in SQL OS consists of memory nodes and memory clerks that provide accounting for various types of caches and make sure that no cache grows too large and affect performance of other caches. So memory management provides a balance between the memory needs of various SQL Server components and various caches that run within it. SQL Server has over 100 types of cache and cacheable information. So there is a need to provide a unified caching platform or unified caching framework. And that's the goal of the SQL OS. SQL OS makes sure that each cache has appropriate counters and that no cache can grow too large. And as the memory consumption grows and you experience memory pressure, each cache has a appropriate aging algorithm that makes sure that older entries are thrown out so that the new entries can be put in. That algorithm is very similar to the algorithm that is used in Oracle, and it's called least recently used. So basically, we keep the most recently used items in cache while throwing out the least recently used items to free up memory for other new cached entries. In addition to memory management and process scheduling, SQL OS also provides us with exception handling, deadlock monitoring, resource monitoring, making sure and ensuring the health of your SQL Server engine. It also provides the ability to host other components, such as SQL CLR, within the database platform. So it also has a hosting subsystem that allows common language runtime to run within the database engine and use the resources available there. Let's take a look at the memory address space and how SQL Server uses memory. Memory allocation in SQL Server, thanks to the SQL OS, is dynamic on two main levels. It is dynamic at the higher level, where the overall memory consumption of your SQL Server depends on what is the amount of memory that is currently available on the system. And the more memory is available on the system, the more memory the SQL Server will be allowed to allocate or will be willing to grab from the operating system. SQL Server listens to an indication or a notification from the operating system about the amount of physical memory that is available. And whenever the physical memory runs low, SQL Server will back off and will basically release some of the memory and will lower its memory consumption in order to provide the operating system and other applications that might be running with enough physical memory to run effectively. So basically, it's the operating system that asks the SQL Server to sometime give some memory back and not the other way around. Thanks to this, SQL Server will not overcommit memory, will not grab too much memory and force the operating system to page, which would be which would have very negative performance effects on for both SQL Server as well as other applications. So the global allocation of memory allocation of SQL Server to a large extent depends on how much memory is currently available on the operating system. If the memory is available, SQL Server will be willing to commit and consume more memory. If the memory is scarce, SQL Server will be willing to limit its consumption and release some of the memory back to the operating system. On the lower level, that memory consumption is also dynamic because the size and the number of items that is contained in each of the cache changes over time. And depending on what is the situation on the system and how much memory we have, the different caches will have various sizes. So basically, if one cache wants to grow, that often happens at the expense of another cache. If a particular cache grows to its maximum limit and we still want to put some more information in it, we need to have the ability to remove the old entries to make space for the new entries. So essentially, the SQL OS makes sure that all the caches get the right amount of memory to provide good performance and balanced memory consumption. Of course, in the old days, we had 32-bit architecture. The 32-bit architecture had a very limited amount of virtual address space available. That led to certain problems because with less virtual address space and less amount of addressable memory, we couldn't grow some of the caches or take full advantage of the physical memory available on the system. So the 32-bit architecture, on one hand, you could increase the addressable space that was available to SQL Server from 2 to 3 gigabytes. On the other hand, you could also use the address windowing extensions, AWE, in order to access any physical memory above your 4 gigabyte limit, above the addressable, what was addressable, directly addressable memory. That memory, that AWE memory above the limit of beyond the virtual address space limit, could, however, be only used for data cache. So you could only put your data pages in that memory. So it was not, you could not use that memory for other types of cache, for instance, for your procedure cache. The situation changed once SQL Server moved to the 64-bit platform. And the 64-bit platform allows for pretty much unlimited virtual address space. And you can use all the physical memory, even on the biggest servers that are currently available on the market, by running SQL Server 64-bit. SQL Server 2012 supports both 32 and 64-bit versions. However, of course, for practical purposes, most of us will be running 64-bit versions of SQL Server. I don't think the 32-bit version of a database platform makes much sense in today's world of purely 64-bit hardware with a lot of memory available. In my next demo, I would like to show you how you can see the amount of memory being used by SQL Server by using various DMVs. So how the dynamic management views that are available in SQL Server allow you to observe memory consumption both on the server level as well as on, as for individual caches. So, just a few of the very interesting DMVs, memory-related DMVs that are available in SQL Server. First of all, SysDM OS SysInfo is a DMV that provides a system-level information. It provides the information about the SQL Server and the underlying operating system and the underlying hardware. So, for instance, we know the number of CPUs that is available, but we also know the amount of physical memory that is available on the host machine. So in this case, we have a host machine with exactly 4 gigabytes of memory. The amount of virtual address space and the virtual memory is over 8 terabytes, since this is a 64-bit machine. Out of those 4 gigabytes of physical memory, SQL Server has actually committed about 200 megabytes. This instance has started recently. There is no big activity happening on this instance, so it is fine using just 230 megabytes of physical memory. The committed target is the amount of memory that SQL Server currently considers to be available to allocate. Given the situation on the server, the amount of physical memory that is actually available and not consumed by other applications, SQL Server thinks that it could grab as much as 2.7 gigabytes of memory if needed. Other interesting information available in this DMV is not related to the amount of memory. Another DMV is DMOS Memory Clerks. And DMOS Memory Clerks shows us a breakdown of memory consumption by different memory caches. And as you can see, I have about 200 different caches and cache stores and user stores. Each of them has a different purpose, And depending on what functionality you use and how, they will have greatly varying memory needs. One of the big ones, of course, is SQL buffer pool, which is the component or the cache responsible for caching our data. And we can see that it allocated 42 megabytes. Another one is Storage Engine, which allocated about 6 megabytes. We have some memory allocated for SQL CLR, etc., etc. So essentially, we can see what is the breakdown of our memory by various caches. We can also look at a DMV called SysDMOS Memory Nodes that shows us the NUMA nodes into which our memory is divided. So in this case, I have one real NUMA node, and then I have one special purpose NUMA node for a component known as Dedicated Administrator Connection, or DAC. It's Dedicated Administrator Connection is a special area of memory that is reserved in case your normal server becomes unresponsive. You can get to it using Dedicated Administrator Connection. So it's kind of like a server within a server, and it serves as a backdoor in case of some problems. So basically, I have one real NUMA memory node with about 8 gigabytes of virtual address space reserved, and about 230 megabytes out of that committed. So that maps to the memory consumption that I've seen in my previous DMV. We can also look at SysDMOS process memory, which shows us the amount of physical memory used by the entire SQL Server process. We see the virtual address space, how much of that virtual address space was reserved, how much of it was committed, etc., etc. It also shows the indication, the indicators for physical memory low and virtual memory low. In case we were running low in memory, either physical or virtual, one of those indicators would be on, and SQL Server would be adjusting its memory consumption accordingly. And then finally, SysDMOS SysMemory shows us the amount of memory that is available and allocated on the operating system level. So this is kind of host operating system level, where we can see what is the total amount of memory on the box, how much of that is allocated, how much of the page file are we using, etc., etc. So in this case, again, we have 4 gigabytes of physical memory, out of which 2.7 is available and up for grabs. That's why my SQL Server earlier thought that it could grab about 2.7 gigabytes of memory. We have 8 gigabyte page file with most of that available. There's so many kilobytes or megabytes allocated for the system cache, etc., etc. And the information we get from the operating system says that the available physical memory is high. So basically, there is still a lot of physical memory available on the system, and we can allocate more memory if needed. That's exactly the notification that the SQL Server uses in order to judge whether it can allocate more physical memory without endangering the performance of the entire system. So these were just some of the DMVs that are available in SQL Server 2012 for monitoring memory usage. Now, in order to execute our code, both SQL Server and Oracle use processes or threads. SQL Server generally uses threads, optionally also fibers. Oracle very often uses separate user processes, especially on Unix machines, to provide query execution capabilities. In Windows, it generally uses threads as it is more effective and the functionality is better. The threads are responsible for executing code on the CPU that is available on the CPU CPUs that are available on the system, and they are managed by the operating system. So it's the operating system that that decides and manages how we switch from one thread to another. And in order to prevent the operating system from switching too often and spending too much time switching the threads between one another, SQL Server limits the number of threads that it shows as active to Windows. Essentially, the user mode scheduler works by having one thread active per each per each logical CPU on the system. And only that active active thread will be the one that is considered by Windows for scheduling. Only when we are ready to switch from one thread to another, that's when we show the other thread to the Windows operating system. That way, the SQL OS and the user mode scheduler can prevent Windows from switching threads or performing so-called context switches too often and spending too much time in kind of management overhead rather than executing our code and using and doing, you know, usable work. The threads are assigned to CPUs basically based on the CPU affinity. By configuring your SQL Server instance, you can decide which CPUs will be used by that instance, and therefore where your threads will be running. So in this module, or the first part of module 3, we covered how to configure a database server, how to set various configuration options, what is the importance of the memory for a database management system, and what are the memory areas that are used by SQL Server and Oracle, and then finally, how the threads are being used to execute execute our queries. We will continue discussing these topics in part 2.